is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Randy? Is it working? Can you feel it?
You bet, Lou, and it is an honor to be here with you this evening.
Oh, I feel the same way. I think this may be the first time that we've talked since Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest back in August.
Is that possible?
It could be. I think this might be the first time we've done a show.
Of course, together, I've listened to you on the radio, though, and you're all over the place, too. I mean, not just on the Freedom Fiends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was on Disassociation Nation last Friday, I think it was, with Paul Gordon Collier and Nick. I can't pronounce his last name. Well, I probably could if I was looking at it, but it's a long one. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I will be recording for the Seeds of Liberty podcast, and they'll probably get dropped sometime next week, I think.
Now, Seeds of Liberty, whose podcast is that? Who's the main guy on that?
I don't know that there's a specific main guy, but the folks that are on there are Dave, Danilo, and Jeremy, I believe are the three main folks. And there may be a couple other interlopers that bebop in and out.
And you will be on that show tomorrow night. How do you listen to that? How do you get to it? How do I get to it?
Oh, well, they have a YouTube channel, and as a matter of fact, there's a few Freedom Fiends that have been on there already as far as doing interviews. And then also they have a website, and I believe it's theseedsofliberty.com, and I will check that out when we take our little break and get the real address for that.
And so, put that up on Facebook, right, so that everyone can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
That's right.
And Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. And the guy that follows him will be just the same way.
You think? Well, maybe his hands will stink. Or
well...
He'll be a fascist instead of a socialist.
Well, actually, fascism is part of the socialism family. And
you're right, of course.
Yeah, so I think this will be 45 in a row. So, yeah, I don't see that streak ending anytime soon.
But 45 presidents in a row.
Yes.
Is it true that each one is worse than the one before?
No, because the one that followed William Henry Harrison, or William Henry Harrison, was definitely better than his predecessor.
So there are some exceptions to that general rule.
Yeah, as far as presidents go, he's probably my all-time favorite. So.
Yes. Do you have an all-time worst?
All the others.
It's pretty hard to pick one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's, your choices are, you know, the father of the country, George Washington, the abusive father who, after fighting a war partially over a 3% beverage tax, imposes a 25% beverage tax, and then raises a standing army of 13,000 soldiers to go in and put down that rebellion, that 13,000 being more than was ever put up against the Brits during the War for American Independence. Yeah, he's a loser.
Hey, when there's money at stake, you know.
Yeah, and then you got the abusive spouse, Abe Lincoln, who says, you know, you can leave me, but I'll just bring you back kicking and screaming if I have to. So
he wasn't gonna let him leave.
Yeah, no, so the folks in the southern states, he went to the abused citizen shelter, and he still found him, brought him back.
So, you were mentioning before we came on, there was some, was it an Onion article or was it a real one that got your juices flowing or something? What was that one?
Oh, heck, these days I can't tell the difference between the two. But one that is really relevant, and it's called Podcaster Makes Solemn Promise to Improve Sound Quality Next Episode. and for the fans of the
yeah, I got a cold. I go into coughing fits from time to time here in the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, and for the longtime fans that know that this is a teaching hospice and just how important the audio quality is here on the Freedom Fiends, this should be a pretty good laugh for most folks. Strangely enough, it takes place down in Austin, Texas, not too far from Nima Vedati, so maybe Nima can go over there and give him some lessons. But anyway, it goes, apologizing profusely for the scratchy tone and uneven audio levels, local man Thomas Gebhardt, host of the weekly podcast The Best Is History, solemnly vowed to his listeners Wednesday that the sound quality would be vastly improved for the next episode. Before we get into anything today, I'd like to apologize to you all about the audio quality. We had to switch microphones at the last minute, but I promise you everything will be fixed next week. You know, he really should be using the Audio Technica 2005 USB, yeah, or the new one.
You notice how so many libertarians still have just unbelievably horrible sound. I mean, when you're watching someone who does as many interviews, say, as like Jeffrey Tucker, and you're watching a video, and you know it's sounding a little bit tinny or thin, and you look, and he's got the headphones in from the cell phone, and I'm thinking, wow, that's no wonder it's like that. But I'm not picking on him, because on the on a lot of these YouTube videos that are what, a Google Hangouts, where you see the video, still half the people have got cell phone headsets, and they're talking over the microphone on their phone. And you know, that, like you said, your Onion article, I mean, it pretends to be funny, but it's reality is worse.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what you're talking about are called earbuds. That's the modern name for them. That's
earbuds.
That's what the kids are calling them these days.
I know. I'm old, and you already said that once. There's those things that you mean they're not heads? Come on, they're headsets. And, you know, that's a little bit narrow, because I think if you're an Apple person, they're earbuds. But I don't think if you're an Android person that they're necessarily earbuds.
I can neither confirm nor deny it. I'm just not techy enough to be up on all the lingo. But I will say that Michael Dean has ruined me for podcasts with lousy audio. Unless it's just absolutely super positively interesting, I just can't touch it. You know, I hear the crunching of the Skype, you know, which you don't get with a Fiend phone. And it's just, sometimes it's just really horrible. And you know, Jeffrey Tucker's not the only one. There's actually some big names out there.
Yes, when it exactly comes to
the audio quality, it's just absolutely horrible.
You know, I guess if your audio, I mean, if your content is just so blown away great, you know, maybe you don't have to worry about your audio. I don't know. Lou Rockwell, I didn't notice that his were that bad. I thought he used a good mic.
With him, if he's just talking, then it's not too bad. I don't think he does too many, just go out and do a monologue. But a lot of times when he has interviews, he'll have somebody calling in on either a landline or a cell phone.
Oh, yeah. Who is ever calling in? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can really tell the difference, and without any type of noise reduction in there or compression, you get a lot of the stuff that you don't get on radio, that you might have a tendency to take for granted. So, like a lot of whistling with the S's, and a lot of plosives when people say the letter, use words with the letter P in it.
Well, I hate it when that happens. I hate it when that happens. And, you know, and of course, this is a teaching hospital. We don't
teaching hospice.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're giving up on us yet, and Michael's with us, so I think we can go back to the hospital for the moment. But didn't you have a friend that was going to start a podcast or something? Were you helping with some tips or something? Were you telling me about earlier?
It wasn't anything that fancy, but when I do the promos on Face Beast for the show, I'll usually throw out some one-liner to get people's attention. And past couple weeks, I've said, hey, you know, is there anything that you'd like us to talk about? And Merrick, using the Ask Me Anything clause, asked about podcasting, and his question is, I'm doing my first podcast ever tomorrow with Nick Hazelton of Freedom Fiend on homeschooling. How do I not suck on the radio? You guys are calm and collected on air, but I'm as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a rocking chair factory. What's the secret?
Boy, now that's a hard one because, you know, as a Freedom Fiend, I'm still working on that myself. So, but you can always get a good microphone, and so that you, well, if you suck in high fidelity, and then go from there.
Yeah, well, go get the Audio Technica. Go to creamyradioaudio.com, and that will have just about everything that you need to know for podcasting. There's equipment recommendations, different ways of editing, software recommendations, and that makes it pretty easy. But and as far as you, Randy, you know, how do you keep from getting nervous and freaking out and just, I don't know, going silly?
You mean like alcohol or something?
No, on the radio.
Well, you know, it's just like anything else. You get used to it, and you listen to it after it's done, the podcast, then it plays, and you listen to it, and then you sit there and slap yourself in the head because you said, cleared your throat 10 times, you know, in 1 minute, and popped your peas into the microphone and all of that stuff. And after enough head shaking and beating your head on the wall, somehow thinking about it, it gets a little bit better. I don't know what else to say.
But we'll be back with more Freedom Fiends after his trip to market, and I will give my thoughts on the subject.
Very good.
Wimes!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
This is the Freedom Fiend, and we're back from the market, and this is Randy England, and I'm with Lou, and Lou was about to get into his tips on how to be better on the radio, and I can't wait to hear it, because I have a few things I can learn yet. Lou, what do you got for us, and for your friend that asked the question?
Yeah, I was really nervous my first appearance on the Freedom Fiends as a co-host, and that was under the Michael Dean After Dark, back when it went to a full-time schedule, because originally the show was just on the weekends, and it was Michael and Nima. Then Nima took his leave of absence to become a dad, and you were one of the co-hosts during that time. You filled in for an episode or two. But, It was really interesting because prior to that, I'd done a couple of Fiend in the Field reports from Michigan Peace of Liberty or Midwest Peace of Liberty Fest, the very first one. And then also, Mark Baker's place. He was the Michigan pig farmer that was getting harassed by the Department of Fish and Hogs. So with those things there, like from
Mark Baker's place. Wait a minute. You really have a Department of Fish and Hogs?
Well, it's called the Department of Destroying Natural Resources. I mean, Department of Natural Resources, but we just call it Fish and Hogs.
That's not very much fun. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I interrupted. Go ahead.
But anyway, it was pretty easy because all I had to do was give a little report on what had been going on out at the farm because he had a big old celebration out there. So it was just talking about what I had experienced. No big deal. And I wrote a little article to go with it. So... yeah, that was pretty simple. The Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest went on for a couple of minutes, talked about the fest and things that were there, things that were going on, some of the people. So no big deal. But that very first episode, I was anxious because I have 2 hours that I have to fill. And it was like, wow.
But you had Michael, right, on the other end.
Yeah.
He fills space like nobody's business.
You can't get a word in sledgehammer-wise with him sometimes. But my second episode, that was the fun one. That was the one where Michael called me up early, and I thought I had overslept. And he says, dude, I don't have any internet. You want to do the show? I'm like, you mean like solo? And he's like, oh, let's see about getting somebody else for you. So I wound up doing the show with Nikki Darling, and she and I had never met, never spoken before. We got a chance to talk for a few minutes right before the show started, go over a couple things, and it went pretty good. I was actually kind of surprised. Now, that one, I was super nervous.
But that's how you've met most of the Freedom Fiends since then, is that in that 10 minutes before the show starts, the first time you did a Freedom Fiends episode with the two of you as co-hosts, right?
It's about half and half. Dan and a couple other folks I'd spoken to for maybe an hour or so the day before. I spoke with Dan for probably close to 2 hours. Jim Babb, I'd met him at Porkfest, so I'd actually met him in person.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But it's really funny because when you're just talking into the microphone and looking at your computer, and this back in those days we were using Skype, so there's a picture of Michael, there's a picture of me, there's whatever the avatar is on the person's Skype profile. You just it's a conversation with somebody else, and you don't really think about the fact that there's probably a couple million people here on Earth listening, not to mention the trillions in Alpha Centauri that will be hearing this fairly soon.
And thousands at the NSA.
Maybe hundreds. I don't think we're that important yet. But what really was a shock to me was at Porkfest, I went over and I talked to somebody, asked them for a light or something like that, and introduced myself and said, hey, I'm Lou. He says, oh, yeah, I recognize your voice. I'm like, what, you actually listen to that show?
That is one of the weird things about just being on the radio, because if someone listens, they can walk up to you, look you right in the eye, and not recognize you until you open your mouth.
Yeah.
Which is very odd. It really is.
But I don't... It's not like I go into a grocery like that downtown and people recognize my voice, but if I go to different Liberty events, it might happen a little bit. And it's still a shock when it happens. But more Freedom Fiends after this trip to the laundry room and the market.
Worms.
Worms!
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Meow, meow, meow. And welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Hey, this is Lucander Fiend. I'm joined by Randy England.
Yeah.
And welcome back. Yeah. Yeah. What's your wrestling name again?
I am the Wampus Cat.
Yeah, the Wampus Cat. Yeah, good stuff. So, yeah, I guess the final advice that I would have for Merrick would be to just have a little fun. Relax. Have just a conversation. Yeah, it's no big deal. It's a conversation. Besides, editing is your friend. But one thing that I can say is I would rather eat glass than go for a full segment without a co-host. And I can go off on a rant for a few minutes, but if I don't have somebody to pick up the slack, if I have to cough or something like that, oh gosh, that is the frightening thing.
Well, you almost had that. You didn't hear me one time, I remembered, and we weren't at a panic at the beginning stage of the show yet.
Yeah, or before the show.
I don't know. We got it all ironed out because we're so finely engineered, both on each end and at GCN, that everything pulled together in time, as it almost always does. But yeah, that would be rough. I'm not sure if I was completely by myself. I mean, I might think back to some time when I had some court case, and maybe I just start giving a closing argument that I remembered or something. Because yeah, that would be very tough. And how does Rush Limbaugh do that for two solid hours? I don't know. Although I know one thing that he does. He tends to talk about the same thing for one whole hour, or at least you used to. I've listened to him for about 20 years, but he always you could tune in for like a 10-minute segment somewhere in the hour and get the whole hour. So maybe that's the secret.
Maybe it is.
Of being able to repackage what you said in the first 10 minutes and repackage it over and over again, put a little different spin on it till you burned a whole hour. And that's kind of that must take some talent. I mean, in a way, that's what you do in this show, but we have different people to do it. But to have one person to do it, you're thinking maybe I need to be multiple personalities or something.
Who knows? It could be, or have voices in your head that you talk to.
Sometimes I wish I did. All of a sudden you disappeared if you accidentally hit that disconnect button on your Fiend phone, and here we would be. But that hasn't happened, and sooner or later it will. And I think, though, that if that did happen and somebody was stuck for more than a few minutes, GCN would probably start running an old Disney movie or something, so it wouldn't be a complete disaster.
Well, yeah, they have the alarm that goes off when there's dead air. And I've been to GCN and I've seen it happen. So they have this like strobe light that goes off, the red light that flashes around like on top of a cop car. All the other lights go down, the strobe light starts flashing, you got the sirens.
But what good does that do me, though? If you go off the air and I'm still talking and I'm going on and on and I feel like Rand Paul in a filibuster and I'm starting to read from the phone book. I mean, they may not even know that there isn't dead air. There's dying air, but their alarm might not go off.
Right. Well, it goes off when there's absolutely dead air. Like if we all got disconnected,
okay.
Like let's say the internet like died in up here in Michigan and down there in the Ozarks.
Yes, so. as it does from time to time. I have been failed by my internet far more often than by my Fiend phone. So there we go. I don't know that I have anything more to add to the tips. Like you said, just go for it. And also the fact that it's a podcast and you could cut out all of the ums, the I means, and whatevers. You can cut all that out and make yourself sound like a genius if it's going to be edited for later playing. So what's to fear. Any word that comes out of your mouth that's not a winner goes into the cutting room floor, I guess you would call it. Actually,
yeah, the memory hole.
The trash bin on your desktop would be more like it, but, you know, same thing. You know, just get out your Audacity software, whatever you use, and you can do magic. And you can even stretch the thing out so it's still the right length when you're done. It's amazing the things those can do. Well, Lou, did you hear about the guy? And I think this was at the Smoking Gun, and you know, it's after midnight. I suppose I can read the headline: man busted for wiping butt with summons. Did you see that?
Yeah, New Jersey man strikes again. He's kind of like Florida man, except a lot more crude.
Well, yeah, but it's very crude. But the thing that got me is that it was a very directed crudeness. I mean, his contempt was directed to the system. I mean, the summons is a court document. Or it becomes a court. I mean, when it's handed to you and the police hand it to you, at that point it's not. But by the time the prosecutor gets a hold of it and signs it and files it with the court, this is a court document. So this was a pure political expression. This wasn't, you know, you shouldn't dismiss it as just a mere crudity, even if it was crude. But it said, let's see, a New Jersey man has been indicted for wiping, quote, between his butt cheeks, quote, with a police summons that he then threw at the cop that wrote him the summons, I guess. Now, this is a felony. He has been indicted by the grand jury in New Jersey. The thing that struck me that was odd about it was that he's charged with subjecting a police officer to contact with a bodily fluid. Now, does there seem anything wrong with you with that charge?
Well, the fact that somebody was getting a summons, that leads me to believe that there's a problem. As far as the contact with the bodily fluid, I don't really know about that. I could kind of see where that's going. I wouldn't want somebody to hand me, you know, throw a piece of paper at me that had stuff, you know, on it, no, bodily stuff.
I went and checked the statute, though, in New Jersey. And the statute forbids throwing a bodily fluid at any. There's a whole long list of people. Basically, they're all government employees, as you may imagine. There's absolutely nothing in there that makes it a felony to throw a bodily fluid at Randy England. Apparently, I'd have to get back and working for the government before such protections could ever apply to me, and that annoys me a bit just by itself. But I could not find a definition for the word bodily fluid, and I'm thinking, well, then if there isn't a legal definition for a term, then you just have to use the common definition. And of course, you look up the word fluid. A solid object is not a fluid. And I don't know how they can make this stick, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Unless maybe they've already got a Supreme Court case there that says that if this happened before, maybe they just decided that since they really didn't like the person that did it, they would make that fit under a statute that clearly did not forbid contact with a bodily solid.
I think it's fancy wording for not respecting the wise overlords.
Now, you can't say that, though, because that...
Why can't I?
Well, that's you know, kind of behind the scenes sort of stuff, don't you think?
Well, that's what we do here at the Freedom Fiends, is we talk about what's behind the scenes. It's fiends behind the scenes.
Exposing the lies, yes.
Yeah, because as you've done your research on this particular statute or regulation, rule, law, ordinance, whatever it is, you've discovered that it only applies to government officials. I'm using air quotes when I say that. because they're not really, they're not officials. I mean, they're just government employees, statocrats. So the statocrats are given some sort of special protection by virtue of, I don't know, they knew somebody and got a job there. And they are above the common man. At least that's the way the... the statute is set up. You know, you could do this to anybody else, but you can't do it to a government employee.
If you dug a little deeper, I think what you'd find, and I didn't dig deep enough, but I suspect that if you do this to a government employee, it's a felony. And if you do it to just, you know, your grandmother, it's only a misdemeanor.
If that...
Yeah. Well, I don't know about New Jersey. I know in the state of Missouri, it goes that way. And, you know, and most of the time, the bodily fluid is usually, it's spit. That's what happens a lot. When people are getting arrested, they lose their natural reticence to spit on people and then do it anyway. And you know, I guess you know, you get upset when you're being kidnapped, so I won't judge them.
Now, I'm going to be a little bit presumptuous here. How many times had this happened that it became necessary for them to come up with a statute on this?
Well, I think this comes from people spitting. I think that's where this statute comes from originally. And then it happens to also take in things that are a little grosser than spitting, you know, and it could take in some things like what if you cried on a cop? I mean, I guess that would be a felony too, right?
And embarrassing. Now, from what I understand, in prison, one of the methods that prisoners have for attacking the corrections officers, I really don't think that they should be called corrections officers, because there's no corrections going on with a high rate of recidivism, but that's another story. One of the things that the prisoners do is they gas the COs, and that is throwing, how can I put it, bodily fluids at the guards. And it is very messy, and probably describe this story here. But more Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
That's right.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Can't see me, but I was just playing air guitar to the bumper music. So now I've come across something here that is very unnerving, very unsettling. It's very, very frightening, and this may cause people to do things to court documents or police documents and throw them at cops. And the government is planning something here, something very nefarious, and it involves the ATF and gun grabbing. Government to confiscate one person's guns just to make the rest of them squirm. So apparently, out of Mordor on the Potomac, saying they can't wait to see the looks on the faces of the nation's most avid gun enthusiasts, top government officials outlined their plan Wednesday to confiscate the legal firearms of one American citizen just to make the rest of them squirm. In a massive, highly coordinated raid, 50 armed agents from the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, Bureau of All Things Fun and Exciting, will reportedly storm the home of a randomly selected law-abiding gun owner in the dead of night and seize every weapon on the premises. According to sources, The surprise operation has been several months in the planning stages and is being conducted entirely for the sake of watching the individual gun owner and subsequently the nation's gun right activists as a whole completely freak out over it. We want to get these people as riled up as possible, so we'll be going in big and going in fast, ATF agent Greg Lornberry said of the plan to use a large and dramatic show of force to take away the citizens' lawfully purchased assault weapons, handguns, shotguns, and hunting rifles, as well as every single round of his ammunition. We intend to burst through the front door and the back door simultaneously in full tactical gear while screaming, "We're here to take them all!" Then we'll pin the guy down, round up every gun he owns, and tell him right to his face that he better let his friends know we're coming for theirs next.
I didn't hear anything in there about shooting the dog.
Well, this is a longer article. It might be in there.
Oh, it might be there.
We've already lined up a couple of helicopters to swarm the place and shine floodlights through the sky's window. While the whole raid's going down, too, he continued. Oh, man, this is going to be so great. Now, this is satire, but as I've said a million times before, the thing about satire is it's just so darn believable. I think the things that really pop out at me is talking about the 50 armed agents going through front door, back door, going in like SEAL Team 6 to take out Al-Qaeda's number one guy or some nonsense like that. And really, that is the way the cops operate, especially the ATF.
No knock, too. No knock, nighttime raid. The whole ball of wax.
Yeah, and they'll probably cut power, put on the night vision goggles, go in.
Flashbang grenades all around.
Yeah, probably garrote the pet dog or the cat, whatever. So, but it's... When they do the description of the assault and the whole activity in there, it is very realistic. And I don't know, this whole, granted satire, but they're saying, oh yeah, this is going to be great, this is going to be fun. If you've seen the video of the cops that took down that licensed medical marijuana dispensary, they're in there high-fiving, fist-bumping, throwing darts, eating the edibles, and just having a grand old time after they threatened the patient in the wheelchair. That is really how the cops operate.
It's so like you're saying
their jollies off of the...
All they had to do was put in... the satire was the headline at the beginning. All of the rest of the paragraph could have just been lifted from various accounts of police raids in the last 10 minutes. Because that's just what it reads like. It looks like it was just, you know, this was an easy article to write because you just pulled it together and it wrote itself. They say that news articles are going to write themselves soon. You know that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, and then I guess the only thing that'll be left to do will be for a copy editor to write a headline, and out it goes.
Pretty much.
Lou,
more
I think we're...
Freedom coming up. Second hour.
See you then, worms.
Worms!
This is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your freedom fiend bone. I'm Randy England, and co-host Lou Sander Fiend has hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Lou. Have I got you there? You still here?
Trigger warning. Show us on the Dell where the freedom fiends touched you.
Touched your heart, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, we touch people's hearts improperly.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, speaking of, you know, a little touchy feeling and bringing a tear to my eye, you were talking about a big change in the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, and there was an article, I think, that you were going to bring up. Is that not right?
Yes. Yeah, and this is from the dailybreeze.com. The L.A. County Sheriff aims to recruit deputies with a strong moral compass. And let me point out the obvious first, that somebody with a strong moral compass would not become a deputy. Sorry.
Well, you are just stepping all over this without even giving them a chance, Lou.
Well, what is the job of a cop?
All right, we got the irony out of the way, right?
You know, yeah,
that is ironic. I'm sorry.
Now
I interrupted you again.
With sheriffs, the sheriff's department has two main jobs. One, they'll go out and they'll do patrol, law enforcement stuff, which means enforcing the laws, all the laws, no matter how evil, wicked, cruel, or stupid those laws may be. You know, just following orders. And then the other thing is, they are prison guards at the county jail. So literally, just like socialists, they are their brother's keeper. But the article goes on here. For the past four years, accounts of deputy misconduct have dogged the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Now, with a major recruiting effort underway, Sheriff Jim McDaniel wants to change the culture of the department, in part by hiring deputies with a strong moral compass. I think we have ample evidence now that we hired a bunch of people back then that we shouldn't have hired, Assistant Sheriff Todd Rogers said of the department's last major recruiting effort in 2006. Well, no kidding. Sheriff's officials vowed that they won't repeat mistakes as they push to hire about 550 deputies within the next 5 or 6 years. The key, according to McDaniel, is undertaking his first recruiting effort as sheriff, is hiring deputies with a strong moral character. Okay, well, that sounds pretty good so far, right? Any thoughts?
Well, my thought is, which morals are you going to bring into play here? I mean, I know plenty of people who would be considered, you know, really high moral values, and they're the same people that would love nothing more than to kick down your door, shoot your dog, because they suspected you had a marijuana cigarette in your house. So I'm not sure that's enough. So you probably should go on before I sign on with this. So go
one
ahead.
One of the issues that they bring up is that in July there was an inmate that was allegedly handcuffed for 32 hours without food or water. Allegedly. So while we're heavily recruiting and we want to be able to fill the ranks, we'd rather work short than hire the wrong people. Oh, that's a good thing. Applications for deputy sheriff's positions have been rolling in. The department receives about 400 to 700 each week, Rogers told the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors last month. However, the early data he shared showed that the proportion of African-American candidates who pass the written test is lower in comparison to candidates from other ethnic groups. Some supervisors all clashed with the sheriff over whether new deputies belong on the streets or in the jails, where they are needed to fulfill the requirement of federal consent decree.
So they're in hot water with the feds. Is that what it is? And the feds have a judge somewhere bossing them around, I take it, since they've botched the whole place up so bad. Is that what this means?
Yeah. Probably.
I don't know. I don't know what they've done. I haven't been following these people. But when there's a federal consent decree, you know, apparently they've some judge has got his boot on their neck now. So go on.
Well, when a lower level of government screws something up, you just got to absolutely positively have the feds come in there and straighten things out, because they do such a great job on their own. But something I'm curious about, and this is kind of going off on a side issue, it mentions that the proportion of African-American candidates who pass the written test is lower in comparison to candidates from other ethnic groups. Having been a former persecutor and working with law enforcement, as you have, what's up with that? I mean, are you up on these written tests that they have? Do you know anything about them?
You know, not really. And is this any different than any other kinds of tests of school kids and stuff like that? I mean, is it really any different? I don't know, you know, about that. But they, you know, to get in the whole mess of, you know, whether this group gets lower scores than this group, and then why that may be or something, probably is boring. I don't know.
Well, I've never taken one of these tests. I have no idea. Although, who knows? Maybe I can apply for this position here. Well, actually, I'm a little bit old and probably don't hit the physical fitness standards like they're looking for.
Well, but you could apply for to be a captain or something instead.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, being old now, you know, you're not old, as you said at the beginning of the first hour, but you're older.
Yeah.
One thing that I thought was sort of interesting, it seemed to say that at the moment, the people that we hire are for the jail, and that we really need them out on the street. And I may be wrong about this, and I do not know the kinds of troubles that they have had at their jails, but my experience between, as they're always called, corrections officers, and all you have to do is call one of them a guard and you'll be corrected, which makes sense since they're corrections officers, you know, they'll correct you. But and not to be as hard on them, because other than what the job they do, I find that jail guards, prison guards, the ones that I know and have run into, you know, for years and years, they tend to be a lot more easygoing and get along with the prisoners than the cops on the beat that bring people in and arrest them. I think that most of these videos you see where somebody's, you know, getting the hell beat out of them, you know, after they're arrested and taken in, I think most of those are probably taking place at the police station. You know, not after they've been booked and sent to the jail and that. I think there's a real difference between the beat cops and the prison guards. And I've would far more expect to get the hell beat out of me by a beat cop than a prison guard.
Well, that's why they call them beat cops, and that's why it's called a police force.
But I guess so. But the thing, the funny thing is that I don't know if their problem is really in the how much the problem is in the jail, whether they just need more help. But it seems to me that wanting people that are, what are they wanting? People that are nicer, someone who will come into a situation, and as soon as somebody mouths off to them, they take that as an excuse to escalate the violence rather than de-escalate. And I'm not saying anything wrong with that. I, you know, if I'm going to have a cop, I'd rather have him trying to calm things down than heat things up. But I think that's more of a problem on the street and at the time of an arrest than it is at the jail. Although you did say one guy, they didn't feed him for...
Yeah, 32 hours handcuffed without food or water. Now,
I don't see how that could happen at a jail. Because jails feed people three times a day at specific times. This is what happens to people that are locked in an attitude adjustment room, you know, with padding on the walls and the lights turned off. You know, and they forget about you or something. I mean, I don't know what this particular incident was about, but I'm wondering if that even happened at the jail or if that was another one of those things that happened, you know, shortly after an arrest or something. It says following an arrest.
Okay. McDonald said so in July in response to learning that an inmate was alleged. Okay, inmate. So that would, that language infers that it's somebody in the county jail.
No, an inmate. Inmate could be something that anyone who's in custody could be called an inmate. And it says that he was held deprived of food for more than 30 hours following an arrest. And
My article doesn't say following arrest.
There's another one you can click to. A new around-the-clock team has been created to facilitate movement of inmates to a housing area where they receive mandatory welfare checks. So, something like that. But, that's a little excessive, 30 hours. Normally, you do get fed three times a day. The food sinks, but they do feed you.
Well, if a detainee disappears for 32 hours, wouldn't that kind of imply that they're not keeping track of their people? Or maybe they are keeping track of them. I don't know.
Well, yeah. You're assuming that it was an accident, and you're asking whether they're evil or incompetent. Or perhaps both.
Are you evil or stupid? Answer the question. Don't wait for the translation. But now, one thing I could tell you is down in the Detroit area, Wayne County, and I don't know how it is up here in Bear Saskatchewan County, but down in Wayne County, when deputies are hired on to the sheriff's department, they usually start off their rotation in the county jail. And some wind up staying there for quite a while, and then others, they do their time and get out on the streets as soon as they can. Now, I don't know a lot of prison guards. I haven't met a whole lot of them. I've met one that I can really think of that I talked to and heard about, and he was over at Jackson State Penitentiary, or the prison now. They don't call it a penitentiary anymore. But he talked, and he was an older guy, and he said that the way he does his job is he goes in, does his job, doesn't mess with people, and in return, he doesn't have to worry about getting jumped on. I'll go into that a little bit more after this trip to the market.
We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back from the market. This is Randy England, and I have Lou Sander Fien. And Lou was just speaking before we left about, I believe, a prison guard of his acquaintance, and talking about the differences between those who work in the jails and prisons as opposed to those police that work on the streets and that arrest you and take you to the jail. Is that right, Lou?
Yeah. This was an older gentleman. He'd been doing the job for quite some time, and really he was in the home stretch for his pension. And I only talked to him for a little while, but he basically explained how things work. Because the prisoners outnumber the guards several to one, probably in many cases 30 to 1. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, definitely a lot more prisoners than guards. They're severely outnumbered. So ultimately, anytime the prisoners want to take that prison over, they can. There's really nothing to stop them, because the guards would have to have like a really good reaction time to draw weapons and actually try and lock the place down. So his strategy for survival is to go in there and not poke people in the butt with a sharp stick and wonder why they get angry. And he had mentioned that some of the younger guys that go to work in there, their whole thing is they want to go in, they want to poke people in the butt with a sharp stick and get them riled up, because that way they can be, bad guys. I'd use a different word, but this is Freedom Fiends family friendly radio. So by doing that, by treating people, I don't know if I want to say with respect, because if you're a prison guard, that's not really respecting somebody.
Limited respect.
Yeah. By treating people with limited respect, he would get tipped off that, you know, they'd say to him, you know what, you might want to call in to work tomorrow. And the meaning behind that was something's going to go off and you don't want to be here because it could get really nasty. So, yeah. But I mean, if you look back to like the Stanford prison experiment, where you have folks going in there and they're playing the role of guards, and they shortly after taking over become abusive towards the prisoners, it's kind of the same thing that would happen in real life. As a matter of fact, it's very much the same thing that would happen in real life, because how many people are going to be able to go in there and have that type of control over somebody and not have it go to their heads? And it's the whole ring of power thing.
Yeah, you know, though, your good point there with this friend of yours that you talked to was that they were an experienced guard, and they do have the hot shots that come in. My experience with that is that the hot shots do not last, because the thing you pointed out, there are limits to how brutal they're allowed to be to the inmates. It's not like being in Auschwitz or something, you know, where they'd kill you sooner than look at you if you did anything they didn't like. They're not allowed to do that, and so the guy who is brutal to the inmates is liable to end up dead, assaulted, something. They're going to have, people are going to kick back on that guy, and they don't last, the ones like that. I think that the bad, you know, the real bad egg has a lot better chance of surviving out on the street than in the jail. One thing, you know, we were talking about the Los Angeles County wanting to go to, you know, a kinder, gentler jail and deputies there that would be, you know, nice to people. We were talking about that. You remember the inmate that had the he was in a cell and they didn't feed him for 32 hours, and we talked about that before the break. And he apparently had been he was in the jail, and you were right about that. He was in the jail, but he had gotten out of hand. Assaulted a female deputy, it said, and so they had put him in real restraining situation. I know in our local jail here in Jefferson City, and I mean the sheriff's, the regular jail, not just the holding cells that the police have, they have a little room there, which is just four concrete walls, a ceiling, and a floor. And there's a drain in the floor. The drain actually flushes, and they call the room time out. And they close the door and turn out the lights. And I guess I could see how they could forget about you being in there. There's not even a window in the door. They
sounds
want
like
you
fun.
Sensory deprivation sort of thing.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Hey, this is Lou, and I'm joined by Randy England.
Hello, Lou.
And we are talking about an article from thedailybreeze.com. The L.A. County Sheriff aims to recruit deputies with a strong moral code, or compass. So, going into another section of the article here, it's called Dual Roles. Deputy Sheriff Rafer Owens, who is also a pastor, sees a strong moral code as interchangeable in his roles preaching at church on Sunday and as a deputy at the Compton station. He said the sheriff's department allows him to be both a pastor and a deputy. At the end of the day, we're just serving people. Well, that's debatable. He said, sometimes it doesn't take a gun, a baton, or a flashlight. It takes kind words, slowing down. And I agree. I mean, how often do you use a gun, a baton, or a flashlight, Randy?
Not today.
I can't remember the last time I used one.
I used it last time the power went out, so.
the gun or the flashlight? Or do you have a flashlight on your gun?
It was the flashlight.
Okay. Owen's a 29-year veteran of the department, spends his days encouraging young people in his hometown of Compton to become deputies. He knows how difficult recruiting is. He didn't think he wanted to be a deputy sheriff when the idea was broached with him by two deputy sheriffs who were regulars at the Burger King at El Segundo and Avalon Boulevards, where he worked when he was a UCLA student. I don't even like the police, Owen said. He told the deputies about 30 years ago. When the deputy asked him why, Owens couldn't explain it. Really? Was he that illiterate and that incapable of putting a thought together? He says, nobody in our community liked the police, even not having a negative experience with them. Oh, let's see now. Road piracy, harassing people for not harming others. Oh, gee, what else is there? Tax collection. So, yeah.
Nobody liked the police.
Right.
I mean, didn't somebody somewhere? I mean, after all of that and 10,000 tickets later, didn't somebody somewhere get helped?
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, if somebody can't articulate road piracy and harassing people, then, you know, I don't know. But anyway, now Owens tells young people who are skeptical of law enforcement that the only way to change the relationship between law enforcement and the community is from the inside. Okay, so let's go back to Eric Dorner, and before he went on his little rampage of killing people, he tried to change the system from the inside. Now, granted, he was LAPD and not the LA Sheriff's Department, I'm pretty sure, but he made allegations of police brutality and abuse and all sorts of just horrible misconduct, you know, things that would be considered conduct unbecoming. And matter of fact, in many cases, it would just be considered downright criminal if the laws applied equally to everybody. And what did he get for it? Oh, yeah, that's right. He got fired.
Yeah, you know, and in one sense, though, I like what the guy says. I mean, Owen says that the only way to change the relationship between law enforcement and the community is from the inside. But that is dead set in the opposite direction of everything that's on every cop Facebook page, in that, you know, where the cop is there and he's got, you know, enough tattooed on his hands, his fingers, his knuckles, and you know, we're going to take this back and stop people from criticizing. The war on the police has got to end. I mean, that is such a perverted, idiotic stance to think that they can just take back their dignity, take back their respect. You lost it. You can't demand it back. You're going to have to do something different. Or
like earn it?
This is going to keep going downhill if you keep shooting people in the back, you know, just because they run away from a traffic ticket or whatever else they're doing. Your image is going to keep going downhill, and you just cannot fix it by being adamant or going out and having people draw the blue stripe that you put on your curb, the blue line. Have you read about that?
That's for marking the water lines.
Seriously,
that's what it is. And some troll went out and said, yeah, this is a support the police thing. But it was always for marking the water lines.
Well, I like that much, much better then, because that would be an insane idea. Because that's more of demanding the respect rather than you know, earning it, I suppose.
You know, back in the Army, there was an old phrase called rank is something you wear, respect is something that you earn. And, yeah, everybody threw around that nonsense of, well, you have to respect the rank. So it means if you have a sergeant that's not really bright, well, you kind of got to be sort of nice to him. But
you mean you have to act respectful for the rank?
Yeah.
You don't actually respect it because that's ridiculous. Right. That's like respecting Barack Obama because he's the president. I mean, I'm not going to respect anybody because of their rank.
Or respecting the office of the president.
I don't respect the office of the president. I would respect the president if he was a respectable person. And that's the end of it.
I respect the office of the president of the local fly fishing club.
But they've earned it?
Well, it's fly fishing. But here's the thing. These coppers need to learn that a funny costume and a shiny badge is something you wear, and respect is something that you have to earn. If they want to earn respect, well, they can start cleaning their own house, cross a thin blue line, and start arresting the bad cops. If the bad cops are such a tiny minority, if they're just like an enigma amongst the population of good cops, they should take them absolutely no time whatsoever to take out the bad cops, weed them out, arrest them, throw them in general population, and put them on trial just like a common civilian would. Now, I'm supposed to say citizen instead of civilian because a civilian means non-military personnel, and cops are technically non-military, but when they start acting and they're equipped and they're doing the things of the military, then I call them military.
I think that's pretty fair. You know, when they show up downtown in camo and machine guns and whatnot. Although I don't know how camo helps you hide, but you see that sometimes. I don't get it. A tank in your town? You like? I mean, we have one here. We have a town that doesn't even have 50,000 people in it. We have one of those stupid, whatever they are, like a tank. You know that they somehow got. All it does is sit down in the stupid jail, and you know, we haven't had any mass riots where they had to come out and machine gun people with it yet.
I think the county that I live in and the county next to the county that I live in, I don't even think they have 50,000 combined. So no, I don't know if they have a tank or Bearcat or MRAP or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the quickest way to start earning the respect of the public is to quit covering up for bad cops and start arresting them. Start taking them out. Clean your own house, coppers, if you want to have some respect.
And they know who they are. But the trouble is that the higher ranks tend to not be the ones in a place to do that.
Well, hey, if the good cops can't tell who the bad cops are, then they're not very good at being cops. Because isn't their job to catch the bad guys?
That's true, but what happens to the good cops is that they're the ones that end up quitting.
Yeah. You know, I am going to sort of understand why the good cops don't arrest the bad cops. They don't snitch for the same reason that the folks in the Italian neighborhood don't snitch on the mafia. Why the people in the Middle East that are not terrorists don't snitch on the ones that are terrorists, and you know, whatever ethnic group or whatever it is, or whatever type of group it is, why they don't do it. Because all of these groups are gangs, and if you snitch, you die. And it doesn't matter. Cops will kill other cops. They will kill snitches.
Yeah, you want to, when you can't take it anymore, you know, because you're the really straight arrow cop who won't play any of the games, won't lie against, you know, defendants, won't lie against, you know, when you make a mistake, you don't try to pin it on another cop. They do that too. You know, there's the thin blue line thing does exist, but watch it out for your old number one. It actually takes priority over the thin blue line, of course. But those cops, I've known a lot of people that I considered really honest, straightforward cops who wouldn't abuse someone they arrested. Yeah, they still arrest the guy with the drugs in his pocket and that sort of thing. But compared to, you know, the bad ones, they look pretty good, and they all leave. Almost always leave.
You know, it's amazing when you could refer to the good cops as the ones that only engage in road piracy and kidnapping.
Everything's relative, yes.
Yeah, and that everything else is worse. And have you ever noticed that the advice for surviving a police encounter is the same exact advice as surviving an armed robbery? Don't make any sudden movements. Don't get mouthy. Be polite. Do as you're told. Don't look them in the eye.
Yes, and looking them in the eye has actually gotten people in big trouble and probably even precipitated violence on them.
As a matter of fact, there was a case not too long ago. I can't remember where it was. A guy was beaten or shot or something like that for menacing look or something like that, looking the cop in the eye. They called it menacing look or something like that. I can't remember. But anyway, back to the story, though. Why the shortage? A number of factors contributed to a shortage of new deputies entering the sheriff's department. A shutdown of the academy for 18 months due to budget constraints caused by the Great Recession halted a steady stream of recruits, replacing deputies who retired. The sheriff also said various settlement agreements with federal courts require him to hire more deputies to work in the county jails, particularly to monitor inmates who have a mental illness. If somebody has a mental illness, should they really be an inmate?
Well, that's a good question, but they're probably not going to be any happier at the local mental hospital either. It's all pretty dreadful.
Well, the happiness isn't the big thing. Is, you know, are these people getting the care that they need?
Well, no. But that applies to any needs they have, physical, medical, mental. You don't get much, you know, just look at Irwin Schiff.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Randy, is that you making that sound or somebody dropping that in there?
I think that's probably, excuse me, I wasn't up to my microphone there. That's the Wampus Cat.
Yes, it is. So, anyway, why the shortage of sheriff's deputies in
Los Angeles County? Yeah, what the heck's going on there?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different things going on, and it seems like different parts of government are fighting over what they want the sheriff's department to do. Because of the federal consent decrees, they're required to put a bunch of deputies into the jail. But it says here that they want deputies to go out and patrol the unincorporated areas in the county. And the number of applicants that they're getting is... they said about 500 to 700. I can't remember if that was per week or per month, or whatever. But anyway, roughly about 3% of the applicants wind up being suitable to hire. And here it says, we're trying to figure out what the root of the problem is in terms of all of our candidates. 50% of our candidates not showing up, and in particular with the African-American pool of candidates, Rogers said.
What do you mean not showing up? What? Not showing up for work?
Well, they're candidates, so they're not employees yet. I don't know if they're...
Oh, you mean after their... Let's see. Oh, they... Those who fill out an application... Oh, they do fill out the online form. The time between they apply and then they come in to take the test, they're not showing up.
It could be.
Is that right? You know... It makes you wonder, though. I mean, what's the first question you would ask? I mean, if you've ever applied for a government job and couldn't understand why it took 3 or 4 months to get the job, when in the private sector, you walk in the door and say, here I am, and they go, you're hired. That could be a pretty easy problem to solve.
Yeah.
They could just cut a few months out of their process. Their procedure, perhaps, is bloated and government-like. Well, of course, yeah, it's government-like.
Well, that's always a possibility there. Well, these days in the private sector, you don't, for the most part, you don't just walk in and get hired and start the next day or that day. Generally, there's a bunch of stuff that goes along. Usually, it's government-induced obstacles, you know, such as required background checks or drug testing, and just all sorts of silly stuff for jobs that probably don't really require it, but because of liability reasons, it has to be done.
But when I was in the pizza business, that's the way it worked. You would come in the morning, you'd get hired, you'd be washing dishes, and you'd be managing the place by supper. But yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I worked in restaurants for quite a long time, and yeah, you could get hired and start, heck, even that day or the next day.
That yeah, but really wasn't you have to admit that many employment situations, the lead time is just way too long. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
and there are places that, particularly government, is notorious about this, and maybe at education and that sort of thing, they lose tons of really good job candidates simply because the good people get snapped up quickly. You have somebody that's good to do a job of some kind, and a private sector employer will grab them and nothing, you know, just right now, and the public sector will have to take second or third grabs, you know. It happens all the time.
I worked for a large corporation for a number of years, and the promotion process moved like a glacier. And it was very, very slow. And I saw quite a number of people that wound up not sticking around very long because they just didn't want to deal with it. They wound up going to competing companies and starting off as in higher levels of management than what they were doing at that particular company. And one day the manager that I worked for was sitting around complaining about all these people that left because of the process being so slow. And I looked around the office at her and the others, and I said, yeah, look what we got stuck with.
Yeah, and did they learn then?
Nope, never had a clue as to what I meant.
Well, but Lou, anyway, it's been good being on the Freedom Fiends with you tonight, but I think we're about finished here, aren't we?
Yep, it's always a pleasure. I think you and I will be doing some shows coming up in the near future. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
That's right.